Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. We have kind of a smaller group today. I think a lot of folks are at ComFest. That's a good place to be. My name is Daryl, and I'm a volunteer meditation instructor for Columbus KTC. On Sundays, when Lama Kathy is away, we present talks that are devoted to selected Dharma books. And this morning, we're continuing our discussion of the 7 points of mind training by the Venerable Khenchen Trungpa Rinpoche. And this is a manual of Mahayana Buddhist practice devoted to developing love, compassion, and wisdom. And some people might think that this is a manual devoted to beginning teachings. In fact, sometimes people will say that the teachings we present at KTC are simply for beginners and that we don't present advanced Buddhist teachings here. But this is kind of a misunderstanding. And the 7 points of mind training argues that actually there's only one way to attain Buddhahood. So fundamentally, there's only one way to attain Buddhahood anyway. And this is by practicing compassion and wisdom. Actually, even after we attain Buddhahood, this is what we continue to do, is practice compassion and wisdom. So, whether our practice is advanced or not really depends on us. So, if we practice every day with deep commitment, then our practice will be deep, progressive, and actually joyful. But if we only practice now and then with sort of very little commitment, then our practice definitely will not be advanced. And what this means is that we're guaranteeing ourselves more suffering. So, in other words, the question isn't, where are the advanced teachings? The question instead is, are we committed advanced practitioners? So, that's just a little side trip. The author of our book, The 7 Points of Mind Training, is the Venerable Trungpa Rinpoche. He's an eminent scholar and meditation master in the Karmakaju lineage, which is our lineage here at KTC. And as we've been saying, this book is available for free online in PDF format. So the mind training teachings come from the sutras, the words of the Buddha, and from the shastras, the commentaries on his words. And they were collected and condensed by the 11th century Indian master, Atisha. Now, as we've seen in previous weeks, the first of the 7 points or topics of mind training is practice of the preliminaries. And practice of the preliminaries is devoted to preparing us to be a fit container for the main practice. So that's the first point or topic of mind training. The second of the 7 points is the main practice. And the main practice is practicing the two bodhicittas. Bodhicitta is a Sanskrit word that means mind of awakening. And so this is the mind that aspires to attain Buddhahood in order to liberate all beings from suffering. So what are the two bodhicittas? We train, first of all, in ultimate bodhicitta, which helps us develop wisdom. And we train in relative bodhicitta, which helps us develop loving kindness and compassion. Now, last Sunday, we talked about the third point of mind training. So the second point, again, is the main practice of the two bodhicittas. The third point is how to transform adverse conditions into the path of awakening. And specifically, last Sunday, we talked about how to do this using relative bodhicitta. And as we saw, we practice relative bodhicitta in this instance by decreasing our self-cherishing and increasing our cherishing of others. So this morning, we're continuing our discussion of the third point or topic of mind training, which again is transforming adverse conditions. But this morning we're talking about relying on ultimate bodhicitta to do this. So before we get started, let's follow our tradition of chanting together the short prayer of refuge and bodhicitta. In this prayer, we do a couple things. We generate the wish to liberate others, and we take refuge. We take refuge in the Buddha, the source of the teachings, or we could say awareness. We take refuge in the Dharma, the teachings themselves, or we could say truth. And we take refuge in the Sangha, the followers of the teachings, or we could say love and compassion. If you don't know this prayer, please join us in your heart, thinking that we're going to listen to the teachings, contemplate them, and bring them into our meditation and our life in order to benefit others as much as possible. Sanjay Chodang Soki Chognam La Jang Chu Pardu Dagni Kyab Su Chi Dagi Jin So Chi Pe Sanam Ki Dro La Ha Pin Chir Sanjay Dru Par Sho Sanjay Chodang Soki Chok Nam La Jang Chu Pardu Dakni Kyab Su Chi Dagi Jin So Ji Pe So Nam Ki Dro La Ha Pin Chir Sanjay Dru Par Sho Sanjay Chodang So Ki Chok Nam La Jang Chu Pardu Dakni Kyab Su Chi Dagi Jin So Chi Pe So Nam Ki Dro La Ha Pin Chir Sanjay Dru Par Sho. Okay, thank you. So, as we said, we're talking about relying on ultimate bodhicitta to transform adverse conditions into the path of awakening. And Trungpa Rinpoche begins by observing that to rely on ultimate bodhicitta means to realize emptiness. And he says, this means understanding that in actuality, all suffering and negative activity is unreal. He says, it's just like the suffering in a dream. So if we're asleep and we dream that we're carried away in a flood or trapped in a fire, when we wake up, we find that the suffering in the dream wasn't real at all. It was just a dream. And he says the realization of the emptiness of phenomena, the realization that life is like a dream, this is what leads us to the realization of ultimate bodhicitta. Trulog Kabgen Rinpoche, in this book, his book, The Essence of Buddhism, he discusses this a little bit. He says that as practitioners, when we practice meditation, we begin to look at our perception of the world and our perception of ourselves. And we begin to experience something distinctive and new. And this is, we begin to see that our experiences are conceptual constructions. So what this means is that they're not real in the way that we think they are. They're actually insubstantial. They're just thoughts, which are like clouds. And it's in gradually seeing this in our meditation practice that we experience the beginning of insight into ultimate truth, or how things really are. So this brings us to our first slogan this morning. We've seen that in the 7 points of mind training. This is not our specific book, but this book is a commentary on the 7 points. This book is full of instructional slogans, short, pithy statements that remind us what to do. And so our slogan, our first slogan for this morning, says the following. It says, seeing delusive appearances as the four kayas is the unexcelled protection emptiness gives. That's the that's Trungpa Rinpoche's translation. In this book, with the translation by Ken McLeod, it's phrased this way, and this seems a little clearer to me. To see confusion as the four kayas, the protection of emptiness is insurpassable. So this is talking about seeing confusion as the four kayas. So what are the four kayas? The four kayas are the four so-called bodies of a Buddha. And this is kind of a literary or poetic device that describes the four ways that a Buddha can manifest. And it also describes the four aspects or dimensions of being. Now, Trulog Rinpoche, again, in this book, says the idea of the kayas is associated with our ultimate aspiration as practitioners. So in other words, the kayas sort of symbolize the final goal that we wish to aspire. So our slogan has sort of a built-in assumption. And this assumption is that the potential for awakening is actually present within our deluded, confused experience. And the slogan goes further than that. It goes on to say, to realize this, we need to see the emptiness of things. And we can add that we don't need to create or contrive emptiness. In fact, The Great Path of Awakening, this book, it says that all we need to do is look around at phenomena. We see plenty of emptiness. That's all we see. So in short, this slogan is giving us the instruction that if we rest in meditation without grasping, we will see the four kayas. So the four kayas, more specifically, are the Dharmakaya is the first one. The second is the Sambhogakaya. The third is the Nirmanakaya. And the fourth is the Swabhavikakaya. And again, these four things describe two things, the nature of reality and the nature of Buddhahood. So let's talk about these four things individually. The Dharmakaya is traditionally called the truth body. And this is the formless aspect of a Buddha. So the Dharmakaya is enlightened mind. It's the realization of emptiness and wisdom. It's an aspect of being. Again, we said this, these also describe an aspect of being. As an aspect of being, the Dharmakaya is beyond any obscuration or limitation of any kind. Sometimes the Dharmakaya is referred to as the mind of a Buddha. So the Dharmakaya, through compassion, then is said to manifest as the next two kayas, which are the form kayas. The Dharmakaya is formless, but the Sambhogakaya and the Nirmanakaya are form kayas. And the Sambhogakaya is traditionally called the body of complete enjoyment. But we could also call it the body of complete enjoyment and expression. And so the Sambhogakaya is the expression of compassion and transcendent awareness that is actually seen by beings with completely pure karma. So we're talking about bodhisattvas of the first bhumi or higher. And we don't have pure karma, so we don't see the Sambhogakaya. But this is a pure realm of natural well-being. And these are the realms that we visualize in our deity meditation practices. So if we're a Chenrezig practitioner, if we are a Tara practitioner, and so on, we practice visualizing the Sambhogakaya when we practice these sadhana practices. So the Sambhogakaya is sometimes referred to as the speech of a Buddha. And you can see a pattern here where we're sort of talking about the body, speech, and mind of a Buddha. So that brings us to the Nirmanakaya. The Nirmanakaya, again, is one of the two form bodies, and it's referred to as the manifestation body. And the Nirmanakaya is said to manifest in the form that we're used to. We're beings with impure karma, but we can relate to this. And what we can relate to is a normal human being like us. So an example of the Nirmanakaya is the historical Buddha Shakyamuni, depicted in monk's robes, in a painting, a statue, and so on. And so the Nirmanakaya shows us the form of awakening and inspires us to seek freedom from self-clinging and suffering. So this is sometimes called the body of the Buddha. So that brings us to the last of the four kayas, and this is the Svabhavikakaya. And the Svabhavikakaya isn't really a kaya. It's actually an expression of the inseparability of the first three kayas. So that's a lot of weird information. But we can summarize this very briefly. Each of these kayas describes a realm. And so we can say the Dharmakaya is the realm of the absolute. And the Sambhogakaya is the realm of spirit. The Nirmanakaya is the realm of the physical, and the Svabhavikakaya is the realm of the essence of these. So that's a very brief look at the four kayas. And the reason we talk about these is because this is a traditional Mahayana Buddhist teaching. And I think I'm risking the thought here that it may have been more helpful to people at one time than it may be currently. But if you would like to read more about the four kayas, Trialog Rinpoche's book, The Essence of Buddhism, has more discussion of these than you could ever want. And reading this can make the smoke come out of your ears. So we've talked about the kayas, but really our slogan is asking us to do something in relation to them. It's asking us to see our present confusion and delusion as the four kayas. So how do we do this? And fortunately, Thrangu Rinpoche gives us a very clear, simple instruction. He says, we simply view any problems we're experiencing as like a dream or a magical illusion. And of course, we do this because, again, our experience really has no inherent nature or existence. Trungpa Rinpoche says that if we train in this way, if we practice seeing our experience as dreamlike, that this is called the unexcelled protection of shunyata, or emptiness. So what we're saying here, this is probably the essential point. We're saying that even in our normal confusion, the potential for awakening is present. And to get in touch with this, our practice includes seeing the non-solidity, the transparency, the ephemerality, the emptiness of things. And when we gradually learn to see this in our meditation practice, we are able to let go of the story or stories that we're always telling ourselves. And letting go of these stories is what actually opens us up to compassion and wisdom. Now, Trungpa Rinpoche makes a very helpful point. He says, if we've developed some stability in our meditation practice, in our shamatha, we may be able to deal with difficulties in this way. We may be able to see our problems as the four kayas, or in other words, the inseparability of emptiness and clarity. However, if we can't do this yet, if we're not quite ready to do this, we can still train using relative bodhicitta. So what we're saying here is we have more than one tool in our toolkit, and we can still train by decreasing our self-cherishing and increasing our cherishing of others. And actually, the way this works is that if we practice like that, this actually helps us to practice seeing confusion as the four kayas. It helps us to practice and realize ultimate bodhicitta. Lama Kathy says about seeing our problems as the four kayas that it actually takes a lot of practice and a lot of patience. And of course, this doesn't mean that we should give up. Instead, what it means is that we should practice analytical meditation and placement meditation. Now, as we've seen on previous Sundays, with analytical meditation, what we do is we examine the characteristics of mind, of thoughts, of the thinker, and we look to see what we can find. So we're not thinking about mind, thoughts, or thinker. We're just looking. We're seeing. And we're looking to see what characteristics we can find. And the result is a not finding. And then with placement meditation, we simply rest in clarity and simplicity, which is really resting in Buddha nature. So Lama Kathy's advice is that if we have trouble understanding all this stuff about the four kayas, no problem. We can still practice analytical and placement meditation. So what I'd like to try doing this morning is have us practice some analytical and placement meditation. But I'd like to begin by making just a few comments, a few more comments about these two meditation practices. First of all, what we're going to be doing is looking at the mind and trying to find out something about it, trying to see something about it. What we're going to be doing is trying to see where the mind is located. And we have to begin by saying that we've all been told that the mind is in the head. We've all been told that consciousness is a temporary phenomenon produced by the physical body, and it happens in here somewhere. But for our purposes this morning, I'm not asking you to change your beliefs or anything, but for our purposes this morning, we need to just set that idea aside. Because this is just something we've been told by other people. And from the Buddhist point of view, at least in this context, this idea that, okay, our mind is in here, that's just hearsay or gossip or even superstition. So for the moment, let's just set that aside. And let's instead examine our own personal experience at this moment or in the next few moments. So what we want to do is look and see for ourselves. Again, we're not thinking about this, we're just looking. We're looking within, but we're still looking. So we're looking to see, where is the mind? Is the mind really in the brain or the head? Or some cultures think it's in the heart or the chest. Is that where it is? Or maybe the mind is somewhere outside the body. So when we look, maybe we can see where the mind starts. Or we can ask ourselves, well, where does it stop? Where is it located exactly? When we're having a thought or a sensory experience, where is the mind at that moment? Where does it linger? So let's take the next few moments to give this a try. Let's begin by just relaxing and settling the body and mind. So we want to just be nice and relaxed. And to do this, let's just take a couple nice deep breaths down into the abdomen. Just real deep, and then just let the breath out. And as we exhale, let's just follow the breath as it dissipates into space. So let's do this just a couple times and get nice and relaxed. Okay, now I'm going to ring the bell. And when we hear the bell, let's follow the sound. And let's follow the sound to the mind that hears the sound. So let's look at the mind that hears the sound of the bell. So looking within, where exactly is the mind that hears the bell? continuing to look within, where is the one who hears the bell? Continuing to look, who exactly is the one who hears the bell? Continuing to look, who is the knower? Now let's conclude with placement meditation. All we have to do is simply rest in clarity and simplicity. So let's do that. Okay, thank you. So it looks like we have a few minutes to do a little more meditation. So let's continue with another guided meditation. And this one will be devoted to, we just did some ultimate bodhicitta practice. So now let's do some relative bodhicitta practice. And this actually follows our daily format for mind training practice. So this is the pattern we would follow in our daily practice. So let's place our attention on the breath and follow the breath as we breathe in and as we breathe out. And when we exhale, let's imagine sending all our happiness and positive karma to all sentient beings. So let's do that for a few moments. Next, when we inhale, let's imagine we're receiving the unhappiness and negative karma of all beings, and they're being relieved of it. And as this negativity merges with us, let's imagine it dissolves into nothing. So we're sending happiness and receiving suffering. So let's practice sending and receiving like this for a few minutes. Finally, let's let go of the visualization, completely relax, and simply rest the attention in awareness and spaciousness. Okay, thank you. So we have time for questions, if anyone has one. Ron has the microphone set up over here. So if you have a question, please feel free to step up to the mic and share it, and we'll be happy to try to respond.
What primarily do they mean when they say that all suffering is like empty?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
What do they essentially mean when, or what does he essentially mean when he says that suffering is pretty much empty?
I'm sorry, I really can't hear you.
You hear me now?
Yeah.
What does he mean essentially when he says that all suffering is pretty much empty, like it's nothing?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for that. What he's saying is that when we say that all suffering and problems are like a dream or an illusion, what we're really saying, that's directed toward our experience of suffering and our suffering, our problems, and so on. And it's not to minimize our suffering or our difficulties, but it's to address our relationship to our difficulties and suffering. And so basically the idea is that we want to, in our meditation, begin to see that the situation, no matter how difficult is or painful, is workable. And it's workable if we can let go of the stories we tell ourselves about the suffering, about the pain, about the problems, and so on. So that's really the fundamental idea, is to see through the way we normally experience suffering and problems in order to have a new, more skillful experience of the problems and difficulties. Does that answer your question? Okay, great. Thank you. That was a good question.
Hey, Daryl. Great teaching. The whole time you were talking, I was thinking about, and I'm sure some of you have experienced this, if you've gone on, not even if you've gone on a really long retreat, but I remember I was on like a 10-day retreat, and after 10 days of sitting on a cushion, I think I've mentioned this before, but you get to the point where you stop distinguishing between what's outside of you and what's inside of you. At least that was my experience. Like that barrier, you know, your outer skin is just kind of, it's not that duality, just kind of dissolves. And I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah, it's kind of dreamlike. And I'm wondering if the teaching that's being talked about today is referencing that. And then my question is, in the Nundra class, we reading about the different forms of awareness. And so, like, you know, one of them is, you know, the pure awareness, I think. And so I'm wondering, is that like what I describe? Is that like pure awareness? And then if that's it, then this teaching or what's being discussed here is referencing that form of awareness. And correct? I mean, is that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I guess the way I would approach it is to say that, you know, when we are meditating on the cushion, we can experience for ourselves awareness.
There's meditative awareness.
In several forms. So we're placing our attention, let's say we're placing our attention on awareness.
Right.
We can have a very tight, very focused, very closed kind of awareness. Mm-hmm. So it's completely one-pointed.
Like, are you talking like mundane awareness?
I'm sorry?
Are you talking about mundane awareness? Like, just your kind of everyday, like, monkey mind kind of awareness?
Or is that I'm just talking about awareness.
Oh, okay.
Or we can have, we can place our attention on awareness in such a way that it's not tight and closed, it's a little more open. And so we maybe have a better sense of our body.
Right.
And what's going on within our immediate neighborhood, if you will.
Right.
And then, you know, if we keep opening it up, we can have a much broader, place our attention on a much broader expanse of awareness.
Sure.
That is more panoramic, that doesn't exclude, that doesn't say, well, I'm here and
right.
everybody else is out there. And right. so it sort of, ideally, where
breaks
this
down
is,
that duality.
Where this is pointing us right. is toward a panoramic awareness that does not exclude anyone or anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what it's directing us toward is loosening our tight self-clinging and fixation and this tight self-obsession that we have that says this local geography,
right.
that's what's important. Mm-hmm. The rest of it, not so important.
And so what's being discussed in this part of the 7 points is referencing that, what you just described, correct?
Yeah, it's right. it's helping us to, well, it's what we were talking about earlier was helping us to get to that first step, which is beginning to see the transparency, non-solidity of our experience. And that is, that's the opening that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Do I have time for a second question?
What's that?
Do I have time for a second question?
Yeah.
Real quick. So there's, like, you know, the animal realm, human, demigod, god realm, and then you mentioned the, you know, the different kayas. How does that relate all together? Because you're referring to the kaya. I never thought yeah. of referring to the kayas as realms.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, and that's how Traleg Rinpoche discusses it. And, you know, this is just me. My impression is that, okay. My impression is that it's a way of looking at reality from a standpoint of sacred outlook and sacred aspiration, you know. So it's another perspective. It's not saying, we're not saying that it somehow contradicts the other realms you were talking about. Or what we're saying is, well, this is a particular perspective or view of looking at our experience.
Hi there. Thank you for the teaching. You know, one thing I was going to say is that...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry.
You're really going to have to speak into that.
Yeah, one thing I was going to say is, yeah, I've been... When I started studying 7-point mind training several years ago,
uh-huh.
I think first 6 years I kind of gave up on the ultimate bodhicitta because it was too tough. I just focused on the relative because it was just, I just couldn't start. I didn't know where to start. So that's one thing. Second thing I heard was, I know Kempo Kar Rinpoche mentioned we project things. So when we look at things, we project onto it.
Yes.
It's kind of like, I don't know what it's kind of like, but I guess that's what they say. When we look at things, we can't really see exactly. I guess we kind of project what we think we see. So that's kind
Exactly. That's a good comment. That's kind of what we were talking about when we were saying we tell ourselves stories about things. Yeah, absolutely. We project onto experience and tell ourselves stories. And this is about our practice is going to help us cut through that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Yi. Good comment.
So, one more question. So, is the reason why they say to let go of, like, judgments or verbal judgments, is it because, like, that's illusory too? Like, that's, well, is that because our words never can truly capture what's really happening from our point of view in reality? Is that why they say let go of attachments and discrimination and stuff of that nature, because you'll never truly understand what's really happening?
We're not really being instructed to let go of our discernment. We're not doing that. But what we are doing is actually becoming more discerning about, more skeptical about our own thoughts and responses. So to look with more discernment at what is really happening and to see what is really actually going on. That's what we're being asked to do.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So we've reached the end of our scheduled program here. Thank you very much for being here. It's really been great to have your interest and attention, and great questions. So let's just take a moment to silently dedicate the merit. Through our being here, listening to the teachings, contemplating them, and practicing, may we generate a sincere aspiration to tame the mind, wake up, and liberate others. May we establish and maintain a daily meditation practice. May our daily practice lead us to complete Buddhahood. And having attained Buddhahood, may we manifest in order to guide all beings to liberation from suffering.